Hello and welcome to Into the Wild, the podcast that brings you animal facts, wildlife updates and nature stories from the professionals to you. It doesn't matter what animal or environment we discuss here on Into the Wild, what always comes up is the damage that deforestation and pollution has on nature. So this week I decided to dive a bit deeper into this topic with climate activist and sustainability writer Laura Young, aka Less Waste Laura. From what materials are worse, how to avoid them, to does recycling work, and what can we do in our own homes, Laura covers so much great detail in this short chat. We also spoke about the recent Blackstone investment with the alternative milk company Oatly. Who are Blackstone? Why are they problematic? And why is this bad? Again, it's all covered here by Laura, who spoke to Oatly themselves. So thank you so much for tuning in and enjoy the show. Laura, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me on Into the Wild. How are you?
I am good, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. How are you?
I'm very good. As you know, I've had a morning that seems to be running around constantly, and I was emailing you, changing times and asking you. So thank you very much for being accommodating for a start. That's very appreciated. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Now, this is an interesting one for Into the Wild because this is the first time we're actually not talking about an animal or not talking about a kind of environment, but we're talking about something that I guess some activism with helping the environment which these animals live in. So before we get started on the topic, for the listeners, can you just explain to me who you are and what is it you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks so much for having me on. So my name is Laura. I live and work in Glasgow. I guess the way that we got in touch is because I have an activism, environmental sustainability kind of platform online called Less Waste Laura, and I do a whole bunch of stuff on there in my spare time. You know, love the environment, love nature, but also totally see our role in having to take care of it, and yeah, do activism around that. But I actually, 9 to 5, I work for an NGO charity called Tear Fund. I have an academic background in geography, environmental science, and then a master's in environmental protection and management. So I just love the world, nature, and yeah, went to study it and I work in it, which is fab. But yeah, that seems like a pretty short introduction, but there you go.
No. Sometimes you're sat there going like, right, I've mentioned that. But that's cool, and that is how we got in contact, I guess, because I saw the wonderful way Twitter works is, you know, you network through these people and then your name come up and I saw your blog and I thought, this is amazing. This is something that I think would be great for our show to talk about, you know, a bit more in depth when we say, you know, these animals are endangered because of habitat destruction and, you know, pollution. But let's actually dive into that issue a bit more and talk about what we can do. I'll ask you this question as well, because this is something we ask every guest, is how and when did your love for nature and wildlife and the planet begin? When did that start for you?
Oh, I think that's a good question. Probably most of your guests say something similar, like, oh, I've always loved nature, you know, grew up as a kid, blah, 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 blah. I've probably got a really similar story, but I live in Scotland, I live in Glasgow, and my family, we've always done, like, holidays in our own country, staycations, but I think exploring your own country and, like, being a tourist in your own country just makes you appreciate what you've got, and in Scotland, we have lovely mountains and amazing white sandy beaches, even though it's Baltic. But I think I just fell in love with like seeing what's on our doorstep.
Yeah.
And then yeah, I chose to, I guess, study geography because I wanted to know how the world worked and how we as people interact with the world, and I really wanted to take that to a deeper level, and then just fell in love with learning about natural systems. I mean, like, cities are great, but oh my gosh, like, take me to a woodland or take me to a beach any day and I'm so interested. And so I feel I've done loads of stuff within that, but really it has been a lifelong thing. But I guess, you know, it's one of those things. If someone asked me to describe my ideal day or my ideal holiday, it would always be something to do with nature or to do with wildlife.
Yeah, that's the same. And I think you're right when you say that similar with all our guests and myself on this show, is that it always comes down, really, no matter what we do, it always comes back to, as long as I see some nature and see some greenery,
yeah,
that's the important thing. You said you're in Glasgow, and I've got to say, I went to Glasgow, I was doing some gigs up there last year, maybe, back when we could travel. And Glasgow Botanical Gardens are amazing. I fell in love with them.
They are so, so stunning. And, like, so Glasgow, if you take the Gaelic, so, like, Scotland's kind of original language, and say Glasgow, it's actually Glashu, and that means the dear green place, because Glasgow has, like, pear... I don't know if it's to do with per member of population or per area, but it's got, like, the most green spaces in, like, Europe, I think, in terms of the size that we are and the people that live here. Yeah. And so Glasgow's full of amazing, amazing green spaces, and our Botanic Gardens is, yeah, a great example of one.
I was very lucky to be there on a day when it was also, and this might be unheard of in Glasgow, but it was 24 degrees Celsius. And
that was a lovely day. You must have been here on our 2 days of summer.
Yeah, your 2 days summer. It was lovely. And I was like, I don't know what people complain about in Scotland. Yeah. I'm seeing it in the best time. That also happens whenever I go to Ireland. It seems to be lovely and sunny. I'm like, this can't be normal.
That's usually the time that all of Glasgow are away on holiday, and so we miss it too.
You guys go on holiday and us tourists get to enjoy the lovely summer.
Yeah, the Glasgow sun.
Now let's talk a bit about what you're about. You said you have your blog site that you talk a lot about reducing waste, hence the name Less Waste Laura, which is something that has been in the media a lot in the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, especially when Planet Earth did the episode about plastics. But when we look at reducing waste, whether we're talking about it on a commercial level or a domestic level, how important is that to actually happen?
Oh, I mean, so important. Because my journey to even thinking about waste was, you know, always had a passion for nature, wildlife, and then at university, if anyone here has studied anything environmental at university, you just get bombarded with how rubbish people are and how rubbish we are to the planet. But sometimes you get stuck because you just learn about it and think, great, that's fine, I know all the problems, that's okay, cool. You don't really ever do anything about it. And so it was in my final year of uni that I actually decided, right, I need to do something about this myself, even if it's just changing my lifestyle or, you know, doing some stuff just myself. Like, I need to act on this. I can't just sit around and watch the world burning. Yeah. And, you know, not do my part. And I think, and, you know, Planet Earth, exactly, that was amazing. But even before that, we had this, like, wave of information about waste and plastic from Blue Planet. And yes. I think that was a real turning point for people, sort of seeing it, you know, really impact the world, people and animals. And I think that's why it's so important. And, you know, I was actually speaking at an event the other day, and it was all about the circular economy, because I'm a true believer in, number one, that individuals can make a difference, but number two, we do need a system change.
Yes.
But actually, for a country, a business, a society, a culture to go circular or to go zero waste or to limit waste or to reduce consumption, it takes individuals to make that change. You know, it takes individuals to be part of that. And so I'm such an advocate for it. I'm such an advocate for, like, speaking through what you do, like walking the walk, but also because businesses listen to you or trends will shift if enough people do something. So yeah, I would say it's, like, so important to be doing these things as an individual. If anything else, just to be authentic, just to be true to the cause.
And that's the interesting part, isn't it? Because whenever we talk about this and say, what can we do? You quite often, and I think rightly so, our minds go, but it doesn't matter what I do because the big dogs have got to change. But like you said, it's to have that system change, there's got to be a demand and a reason for that system to change. So I guess it really does start with us, doesn't it?
Exactly. And while we're in this rubbish capitalist system, to get totally deep there for a minute, but, like, we are in a supply and demand situation. And so the supply of green alternatives is only going to come if we demand them. So that starts with individual change, and that starts with moving money, moving, like, resources, moving our time. So yeah, I totally agree with you there.
And when we look at the materials that we use, and again, we can talk about this from a domestic and a corporate level, but what are the worst materials that are in circulation at the moment?
I mean, I think the short answer is just anything that we use once and throw away. So anything single use. Because really, no matter what it's made of, there's energy put into making it, there's resources, there's manpower or woman power, there's, you know, all these different things put into just making an item. So whether it's a piece of plastic, a piece of paper, a piece of whatever, if we're just using stuff once and throwing it away, and also throwing it away to like landfill where it's literally going to do nothing, that is the main problem. But I think really the materials, to be specific, that are the problem is materials that are made to be indestructible but used in a disposable way. So for example, like plastic, we don't even know how long it takes to degrade. Like people have estimated 300, 350, 400, 450 years for it to degrade or disappear or, you know, break down. But it's not been invented long enough to even know if that's true. So we're using something that we have no idea how long it's going to be around for, and we're using it for stuff like a drinks bottle and then throwing it away. Like, to literally have a bottle of water that you could get from the tap, or to have a coffee on the go when you could sit in a restaurant. Like, so I think the materials that, like, I definitely try and stay away from are plastics, pretty much all of them, and particularly ones that can't be recycled. But also, recycling's a myth, so, like, let's not rely on that. And then I think you get, you know, like, crazy, you know, types of material, like polystyrene, you know, that's just like ridiculous to get rid of and will last forever, or, you know, you have all these different types. But I would say the main one is just single use, anything single use, and then second of all, it would be plastics.
And that's an incredible thing to think about. What you just said is that plastics have not been around long enough to figure out how long they take to biodegrade. And they've been around, I'm uneducated in this, but I would guess, is it 70, 80, maybe 100 years max?
Exactly. So we have no concept of how long these materials will be around in, and particularly when they're sitting in a landfill, like not even in an area that it can break down. And then even, I guess, if we go even deeper, when these things break down, they just get smaller. What happens to, you know, we don't even know what happens to the small things. Like, it's crazy when you think about, you know, wildlife. There's birds and fish and all sorts being found with plastic inside them. And so it's not even just an issue that it's just been left somewhere. It's an issue that is now being ingested by animals and humans. And so we don't even know what the health implications are going to be of all of this plastic as well.
And it's scary. It's a scary thought. And I'm going to ask, I wasn't planning on asking this question, but I'm also glad you actually brought this up, because I laughed because I agree that recycling is a bit of a myth system. And I think what I've seen where I live in North London, our waste disposal is starting to advertise that, and, you know, on the side of our trucks, and says, bear in mind that 40% of this is lucky to be recycled of that. So, you know, we're taking your recycling, but 40%. And I think it got pushed heavily into the previous generation that recycling is the bit. That's the end of the line. You've done your bit. That's it. But that's, like you said, how untrue is that?
Oh, totally. So there's three main things that they're humongous things, but there are three things that really tell us why recycling is not good. So the first one is us. Like, we don't know how to recycle, so we don't recycle correctly for our council area. I mean, councils all have different types of restrictions and all sorts, but we don't do it properly. We either don't wash it out, or we wish cycle, where we just throw something in kind of hoping that it's gonna be recycled. So we don't do it properly. And what happens is we then contaminate loads, and it's literally not worth time or money to sort it out. So it just goes to landfill. So that's the first problem. We just don't do it well. The second problem is the actual science of recycling. We have this beautiful image of, like, you put in a plastic bottle, it gets shredded, melted, and comes out as a plastic bottle. And that just doesn't happen. Most recyclable material, it actually gets downcycled. So it gets shredded up and processed and brought out as the same material, but something of less quality. So, for example, a plastic bottle might come out as plastic fibres that gets turned into a recycled material, like for clothes or for, you know, or if you've got a piece of paper, it gets shredded, broken down, and turns into like a napkin. And so this idea that we get the same thing out is just not true. With glass and metal, that's the kind of two exceptions. But most of the time, the recycling isn't this way that we have it in our heads. So if you buy something brand new from the shop and it says made with recycled plastic, it will not be 100% recycled plastic, because you cannot get that. That's not actually feasible. It will have a percentage of virgin plastic in it to help bind it together, to help it. So this idea that like we're throwing all this stuff away and it's getting put back on our shelves is just not true. Also, just look at what you've bought. None of it's made of recycled plastic anyway. It's like a few things might be. So the first one's we're bad at it. The second one is like the science is just not there yet. And the third one is this kind of idea of like politics or like responsibility.
Yeah.
And BBC had an amazing programme called War on Waste, where they basically showed where recycling goes. And guess what? It gets shipped off to like countries in the global south or countries that we think like is a dumping ground, and we just sell it to them and go, cool, right, see you later, you can have all of our waste. And so this idea that we're also taking like responsibility for it here in the UK is just wrong. Since that TV programme though, there has been a lot of campaigning and there's been a lot of countries stopping that, and that's a practice we need to like really sort out ASAP. Yeah. But also, yeah, this idea that we deal with our recycling when in reality for years we've just shipped it off somewhere and forgotten about it, which is awful but yeah, so that's why I never advocate for recycling in the sense that you should do it, but I'm an advocate for making less waste so that we don't have to recycle.
And that's the key. I think that's the big thing here is when I see in conversations with some people I know, and when they reply I recycle, and it's like, great, but we should try and also recycle less as well, because we shouldn't have this waste in the first place. Like you said, glass and metals, okay, is one thing, but it's the other things that can't be broken down and remade, as you said, to replace. Now let's look at this from a domestic point of view, because I know my listeners are going to be sat here now going, this is all grand, but how the hell do I do this?
Yeah,
and it
I know,
is.
That's dim and gloom.
Yeah, and when you look at your house and you start going, I remember when I started to buy my reusable things like from my razors and from my soaps and stuff like that, I'm going, this is taking ages, and I couldn't afford to do it all in one go. It had to be a budgeted process. So how easy is it to do this, to reduce the waste within a home?
Yeah, and do you know what, exactly what you said there is the point to remember. Well, first of all, we're in a broken system. We can't reduce everything because we're limited to what is accessible to us, what our privilege allows, like what we have, you know, all these kind of things, just keep in mind. But definitely what you said about there's no point in us all going out and buying a whole bunch of new stuff to be eco or sustainable or whatever. It's all just about chipping away at it, doing it at a sustainable pace for you, your budget, your time. But yeah, so the best thing I would recommend people doing, and this is the way I think it is, you know, makes it feasible for everyone and makes it possible, is just about saying, okay, the next time something runs out in your house, just see if there's an alternative. See if there's like another option out there before just going to buy the same thing. So whether it's toothpaste, pasta, chocolate, coffee, a t-shirt, just have a look around and see like, okay, what are the options available to me and what can I switch to? What can I change up? And it also means that you're doing it at a sustainable pace, because when I decided to go less waste and really be conscious about this, I came back from a trip to my flat and just went, wow, okay, I thought I could go like cold turkey, but oh my goodness, like everything's in plastic. So I had to think like, okay, I need to phase it out. And so I'm now sitting here, like I began my journey in 2018 and now we're here, I mean, almost at the end of 2020, get this year over with, but
yeah,
you know, kind of 2.5-3 years down the line, now pretty much most of my life is either plastic free or less waste or sustainable, but it's because I've slowly chipped away at it.
Yeah.
And slowly, like, use that. We're all inadvertent stockpilers. We have, like, tubes of toothpaste lying everywhere, and we've got bags of coffee everywhere. And so, like, use up what you've got and then find the solutions for them. And then that'll be, like, it'll just be so much easier for you. But it also gives you time to, like, research, because ultimately knowledge is power, or whatever that phrase is. But when we know and, you know, we take the time to research and learn, like, that'll also help motivate you to keep going, because you'll have learned facts and you'll have found brands that you want to support. So yeah, I think it's possible, but I would never recommend anyone does it all at once.
No, because it will just probably put you off from doing it anyway, because it is, when I remember looking going, I've done one room of about 8 things. I'm already up to like £80. I was like, no, I can't do this. I need to do one thing. Like you said, when it runs out, I'll replace with an alternative.
Definitely.
When we look at, And don't worry about mentioning brands or websites here, because I do think, my listeners, this is going to be one thing people on the show are going to want to hear. They're going to, people like to be guided to places. So
yeah,
obviously it depends where you live. I know me in London here, I'm spoilt rotten. I've got a refill station shop 5 minutes down the road. Not everyone has that. Where's the best places to find these alternatives?
I mean, Google, right? That's just like Google is your best friend with situations like this, because as you said, depending on where you live, you will have so many different things. But even a quick Google of like zero waste shops near me, and you will get a whole bunch of answers. And so for me, like in Glasgow, there's 4 or 5 now.
Oh, wow.
When I lived in Edinburgh, there was about 4 or 5. There's also in Glasgow, there's a local delivery one. So like you don't even need to leave your house to go and get it. And these things are popping up all over. Like I used to keep track, and now it's like there's so many available. It's great. Like I can't hardly keep up with all of them. So I would say like a quick Google will show you your sort of zero waste shop options. But also, you know, there's websites, like there's one called Plastic Freedom, and I would say it's the best sort of place to begin.
Mm.
It's a UK based online shop, and it gives you like the most selection to look from. And so even if you don't buy it from there, or you know, you're just dipping your toe, you just want to have a look, they have most items. And if you're wondering if something has a zero waste or a plastic free or a sustainable solution, it'll probably be on that website and you can buy it. And so I would always recommend looking there first, but equally your local shop might sell these things, so it's probably great to support them as well. But like there's just so many options now, you know. When it comes to fashion, you've got like secondhand options, vintage options, charity shop options. You've then got sustainable brands. With food, you've got the same. Like there's so much now that it is amazing to see. And I mean, it sounds silly because I know people want recommendations, but especially when I give a talk somewhere, I'm like, you don't want me to stand here and give you my recommendations, because I'll be here for an hour just naming brands. Like, that's not the most interesting thing you can get from me. But what you can get is like, just honestly be confident in Googling, and then like do a wee bit of research. Just look around their website. But also my DMs are open. If you're needing a quick answer, I'm sure I've got one for you. So if there's like a really specific thing you need, like that's why you reach out to people and you just go, hey, you got something for this? And I'll be like, yes, I do. Here's where I get it, or something like that.
Amazing. And I'm going to say now, I just popped in, when you said charity shops and secondhand shops, saying to everyone that's listening now, oh my God, get there now. If you can get there safely to a charity shop, mask up, go there. Because people during lockdown have done a massive clear out. Mm-hmm. And you can find some bargains at the moment. Like, you know, top brands, but secondhand. Yeah. And you can also just find some lovely vintage wear in there, where this old 70s crockery has come out, which I love. So it's a good time. If you're listening now, if you can get to a charity shop or secondhand shop safely, do so. And my other question for you before we move on to environmental impacts is, Laura, what is the best alternative you've used for you? What is the one thing that you replaced or you learned that you've gone, that's pretty cool?
Oh, my menstrual cup. By a long way. Oh my gosh. Got it in just now. Honestly, it's a firm favourite. No, for real, like, it's one of those swaps that I made for the environment, like thinking, you know, it's a massive form of waste that people who have periods have.
Yeah.
But actually, wow, it's been easy just for my life. It's been easy to, like, save money, save waste, save hassle. Oh, my word. Like, not having to run, not having to run out of something in a bathroom and be like, excuse me, has anyone got anything? So I think that's probably been, like, the biggest lifesaver one. And I would recommend that. And there's amazing stuff happening, particularly with the Scottish Government, to, like, provide those for free to combat period poverty, which I love. But I guess a universal one for anyone, like, what's been my best swap? I don't know. Do you know what? I think, like, the best swap, which is not really a plastic-free item, but I am, like, a total convert to avoiding fast fashion now. Like, I used to hate shopping. I used to hate going to the shops. It was never a thing I liked to do. If I ever had an event coming up, like a wedding or a dance, oh my word, my mum would be like, are you ready? Because we're going to fight all day, but we need to get you an outfit kind of thing. But now I love it because you can go, take your time, like, you know that there's one of everything, so you just have a relaxed day out. Each item feels a wee bit unique, and so I'm a total convert to, like, charity shop shopping or secondhand shopping, which I hated before. So I'd say, like, that's just been a great revelation, and saved money and saved time and saved so much waste.
And that's, I completely agree with that. Something about secondhand or charity or vintage, like you said, there's something more important about that thing when you buy it. It's like, you know that, especially from a vintage point of view, you know that I've probably got the only one. Like, I'm not going to see someone wearing the same shirt at this party because I mean, to be fair, I wear Western clothes, so I'm definitely not going to see another person. But I mean, you get that, I don't know, that uniqueness from it and that excitement. And that's, yeah, that's, I totally agree with what you said there about that having, it makes it more of an event to go and find and look for the bargains and the one-offs. Let's look about the benefit it actually has on the environment. So we've looked at kind of the how, the what, and a bit of the why, but how does reducing waste benefit environment and nature as well with the animals in it?
I mean, like, so much. I mean, first of all, you know, you only have to watch Blue Planet, for an example, or Planet Earth, to just see that even when we are trying our best to get, like, dispose of our waste properly, so in a landfill, I wouldn't say a landfill's proper, but you know what I mean, like, in a facility, it still ends up all over the place, you know, whether that's littering that just ends up in the environment and ends up in the stomachs of, you know, particularly marine, like, species. You know, it's just not working. We just have too much waste. And then obviously there's also a global problem, which is multinational corporations are selling items to countries that don't have any waste disposal. And if you have no waste collection in your country, you've got a few options of how you dispose of it. Number one, you do, like, an illegal landfill that can harbour water, that can breed mosquitoes, that can cause, like, you know, an increase in tropical diseases. Or you can burn it, you know, releasing really harmful gases into the environment. That's not good for our, you know, lungs or nature. Or the third one is you can throw it into a river and it will literally be taken away from you. But equally, where do all rivers go? They go to the ocean. And so, or a big lake. You know, so our waste is entering the environment, and we humans are moving at such a quick pace that animals cannot keep up with. Like, they, I mean, they can't comprehend what plastic is. And so when they see something that is coloured like, you know, a fish, or coloured like something they would eat, like a berry, and they ingest it thinking that's food, that is then going to sit in their stomach and keep them full, and eventually their stomach will be telling them they're full even though there's nothing nutritious in there, and they'll die. And so our waste is just having this rapid, you know, increase impacting on nature. And there's no way that we can sit down with animals and tell them what this is and tell them to avoid it. We just have to clean it up. And so I think there's a whole host of things that are happening to the environment, and some of it is, you know, like, very cause and effect, like a bird will eat a piece of plastic, it will fill its stomach up and it will die. But then some of it is, like, way more nuanced and way more, it's a bit of an impact or an effect down the line. It's an impact because plastic's made of fossil fuels, and the more fossil fuels we use, the more carbon, and the more carbon, you know, it may be a further down the line impact, but it's still impacting them in so many different ways. So I think it's just, it is almost, like, paralyzing to think about, but ultimately we are the ones who have to really deal with that problem.
And we spoke about putting, you know, doing our bit within the home and stuff, but, and this might be quite an easy question, I think I know where you might go with this, but how do we put pressures on, and not just big companies, but how do we put pressures on those companies and governments as well?
I mean, the best thing is just, like, to have our voices heard. And so, you know, depending on what side of activism you're on, you'll say petitions are great or they're useless. But equally, putting your name to one does not take long. So if you see a petition, like, sign it, support it. If you see an email template to reach out to your MP to talk about, you know, these issues, just do it. If you have an opportunity to give feedback to a company, like, just do it, because these are what gets our voices heard. And, you know, there's great organisations that are taking the brunt of this. So, you know, the organisation I work for, Tier Fund, we had a massive campaign last year about plastics, and it was going after Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Unilever and Nestle. But then you've equally got organisations like the Marine Conservation Society, who are going after governments to talk about banning single-use plastics because of all the stuff they see in the marine world. And so also back these organisations that are doing a lot of the work, but you just need to, like, put your voice to that. And then when it comes to brands, you know, if it's a small brand, if it's your local cafe that's using, you know, plastic takeaway cups, go and speak to them. Like, they'd love to hear your feedback, but they also love you as a customer. And so, like, just say, hey, I'd love to continue to support you. And, like, I love what you're doing. I love supporting local. And, like, I was just wondering, could we talk about this? And, like, I'd love to see this change. I bet they, like, that goes a long way. And I think someone once said, fact check this, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure it's true that you know how you sometimes get shops that have like feedback forms?
Yes.
It's estimated that one in every 250 customers will actually bother to ever fill it out.
Wow.
So they weight what that one person says really highly because, well, first of all, you're probably one end of a spectrum if you're going to sign that. But actually, like, it's important because they're saying, well, you know, this person's opinion probably represents about 250 people's opinion. And so, like, let's take this on. So if you see those kind of things around, like, do them, fill them out, you know? If you ever need something to do, if you're on the toilet, like, pull up a wee feedback form for a shop and, you know, it'll take 5 minutes.
What a great bit of advice.
But toilet activism, you know.
Yeah, put the magazines down, guys, and sign more petitions on the toilet. I'm well up for that. So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, and this is where I think we got in contact with each other, was there was a, oh, I don't know what to call it. There was a big thing, that's what I'll say, about Oatly.
Yeah.
Oatly oat milk, which, I mean, if you're between the ages of 16 and 35, you have most definitely heard of this brand. And which, before the recent news, were a very good brand and very popular. But let's kind of, let's get back to basics, Laura. What did they do?
Yeah, I mean, and you know what, it's exactly what you said. Oatly was becoming a household name.
Mm.
You know, people were talking about, you know, we talk about Hoover, that's a brand. We talk about all of these different things and their brands. And Oatly was becoming that. It was becoming, hey, could you buy some Oatly? And so Oatly are a huge oat milk company. And, you know, I think many people would say we're leading in this industry. And we're a very firm favourite for individuals and for lots of cafes and shops. And they have been trying to sort of conquer different markets. So they're originally a Swedish brand, and a lot of their sales are, you know, UK, parts of Europe, and that's really where they've been based. And they've been growing rapidly because of, you know, the increase in plant-based options and non-dairy milks, and also just because they are that favourite. And they've been trying to conquer the sort of American markets and Chinese markets for a while. And I think they've even had cases of, like, you know, literally running out because it's been so popular.
Mm.
And so earlier this year, Oatly decided that they were looking for an investment. So they were wanting to have money put into them so that they could do this sort of rapid growth to really conquer the markets in, for example, America.
Mm.
And what they did is they courted, so they reached out to an investment company called Blackstone. And Blackstone are like a $500 billion plus investment company, like one of the biggest in the industries, so like the global investments industries. And they do a whole bunch of types of investments, but one of them is just into businesses. And Oatly, so they courted them, they reached out to them, and they ended up taking an offer for 10% of Oatly, the company, to be sold to Blackstone in return for $200 million worth of investment. And just for context, Oatly received $200 million worth of investment from a £500 billion company, like dollar company. Like, it's a small investment compared to the giant of the family. And Oatly was the one being invested in rather than investing in Blackstone. And this happened in July, or it sort of got finalised in July 2020. And, you know, the news started talking about this new investment and what this means and the growth that's going to come from this. Oatly's now been projected growth of like $400 million next year, which would mean Blackstone's going to get about a $40 million sort of profit, or, you know, return for their investment for their 10% stake. So you might be asking, like, what's the story behind this? Isn't that great? Isn't it great that these companies are getting investments in, you know, a sustainable brand? Isn't that fantastic? Well,
here's the red flag.
Here it is. So Blackstone, you know, are one of the biggest investment firms in the world, and they have investment in many different things. And some of these things are questionable. One of them is the fact that they have ties to, I don't really know what the official language is used, because there's been so many back and forth between articles online from, you know, the Times or Forbes or Blackstone themselves, you know, trying to work out the language. But basically, they have links to Amazon deforestation. And it's through two sort of farm/businesses/areas that they invest in that are to do with deforestation of the Amazon for agriculture and shipping of goods. So that's not great to begin with. And this is something that is like public knowledge, as in these stories, these links are out there. And the second one is that the CEO of Blackstone, Stephen, I'm going to butcher his second name, Schwarzman, probably pronounced that wrong.
I think it sounds great.
Yeah, oh, we'll go with it. But he is a major donor of Trump, and particularly is one of the biggest donors for his 2020 campaign, and he donates through the Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell. And if you look into all of that, it's also questionable. There's also ties that they have to do with like hiking up renting prices in different places in Europe. And so Blackstone are not an ethical investment company. They have ties to not just like bad business, but like horrendous business, and like business that in many people's opinions is so counter what Oatly's ethos was about being environmental and being sustainable. And basically this all blew up, and it blew up I'm not saying from my Twitter feed, but that seemed to be a catalyst for more people to go and look into it. And Oatly ended up having to respond to a whole bunch of activists reaching out. They have been boycotted by many people and companies like shops and cafes. And this has just launched a whole massive conversation into what does it mean for a quote-unquote sustainable company to knowingly sell, and reach out to a investment bank that is so unethical, meaning that 10%, $40 million of projected income is going to go towards them, and we have nothing to control. So I guess, in short, every time we now buy Oatly, money is going to go to this Blackstone investment company that we have no control over where they put those profits. They might put those profits into Amazon deforestation, into Trump, into hiking up rent prices, into so many things that we have no control over. And yes, that is probably happening all over the place, and we can't control that all over. But one of the main things is Oatly were one of the best. They were so, you know, before all of this, authentic, and like we thought they were really changing the way. And then it feels like they sold out a little bit.
This happened, and I've dealt with, when I say dealt with, I mean on a very activist low level, not personally, but with Blackstone before. A company I worked for that was, it was when I was working in a zoo, and I won't name the company, but they were took investment, quite a large bit, about 40% from Blackstone. And we were all about, you know, endangered animals, sustainability, and I questioned it and looked into it. So I'd already heard of Blackstone before. So when I saw this come up, I was a bit like, like, do you know what I mean? And here's my point on it is, A, Blackstone just sounds bad as a name. No one it's not like, if you're going to be an investment company, call yourself Pixie Rainbow Stars or something. Don't call yourself Blackstone. Second of all, you're worth $500 billion. Of course you're damaging to the environment. Like, you cannot have that wealth and manage or invest into that many companies and not be chopping down a tree somewhere. So you've got to be, and I'm going to, sorry, swear on the podcast, you've got to be shit somewhere. Like, you have to be.
Yeah.
And I think when I saw Oatly do that, for me, it was that kind of, for Christ, really? Like, what do I do now? Because there are, like you said, there's brands that do this all over the place. We can't know about them all. We can try. But then when you know about them, do we have a duty to, because we know about it, stop that? And that's the question I guess I asked you now, Laura. You spoke with Oatly, did you?
Yeah. So after all this, their chief sustainability officer and I had a meeting. And I guess my main thing to them was, look, the reason we're all so up in arms about this is because you guys were the one boasting about your own sustainability and then you went and did this. Like, you've shot yourself in the foot. So you can go and die on this hill, because when I said that, I said, especially, you know, Oatly particularly, they're so cocky online. Like, their marketing just, so when it, you know, when this whole massive story broke, they also then went and put a new web page up that had like a bunting banner infographic saying "Welcome Blackstone," like it trying to explain themselves. I was like, "User disc." Anyway, so I think I said like the reason this has probably been bad is, you know, for example, there's other oat milk brands that have massive investments in the dairy industry or in, you know, oil or whatever, but they've never promised to be the most sustainable, and they've never boasted about it. And so actually, we're not holding, well, we're holding them to standards, but we're not holding them to a promise that they made because they didn't make it. And so I said, that's my first thing. The second thing is, guess what? There's loads of other brands who haven't done this, so I can just switch, like I can just move my business elsewhere. Yeah. So there's options for me. And I think the other thing was Oatly's main reason that they were giving people for why they thought it was okay is because they want to change the conversation around sustainable investments. And I've got a problem with this because they were making it out like they can change Blackstone. No, you can't. And they've been called out for that. Like, you're a tiny investment.
$500 billion.
But I think they were saying that almost trying to, like, catch us all out. And they were all like, bog off. Like, no. Yeah. Like, you, also, they've invested in you, not the other way around, so stop trying to make it out. The other thing I said was, this has been taken down now, but we've got the receipts, we've got the screenshots. Blackstone actually had in their Instagram bio, I'll read it out actually what it said. It said, learn how we're backing sustainable plant-based alternatives to dairy with our investment in at Oatly. So Blackstone were literally using one of their smallest investments as, like, their branding. So clearly greenwashing. Yeah. And being used. So I said to Oatly, like, how do you feel that you are being used as the poster girl for sustainable investments when you're so small? And their response was so tepid. It was like, oh, like, we just think it's great that they're, like, showcasing green investments. I was like, you're kidding yourself on if you think that's what it is. Like, you and I both know that's not true. That's not why they put you on there. So I think, you know, I was saying, like, they're being flaunted as this sustainable investment when really they're tiny and it's not going to make an impact to all the other bad stuff. And I guess there's other people just saying, we get why you're wanting to go for the big, you know, investment bank, and you're wanting to, like, prove a point that investments are sustainable. But there are sustainable investment companies that you chose not to go down.
Yeah.
I also get Oatly was probably big enough to, like, crowdfund it. Do you know what I mean? Like, they probably had a loyal enough funding, supporter base to do that. So I think that was that. And then the final point is, and this is one I had with the CSO when I met with Oatly, was, but is this growth even sustainable? This rapid expansion you're planning, is that even sustainable? Because at the end of the day, like, I want to value a company that's not chasing after the money and not chasing after the market and not looking to, quote, like, conquer. Do you know what I mean?
It's a big... I'm glad I've got the chance to speak to you about it, because I thought... I also loved, when you were talking about it, I thought, brilliant, you know, the sustainable kind of... The sustainable community has sent in Laura, the Glaswegian girl, to sort this out. And that is, that's, I mean, they were bad. Oatly were in trouble then.
Oh, it was so funny as well, because at the end of it, she was like, oh, like, because Ashley Allen is the CSO of Oatly. And so she's, like, from America, like, pretty big deal, like, literally reports to the CEO, and I'm on Zoom with her. And then she was like, oh, I'll see you at COP in Glasgow next year. And I was like, I'll be there. I'll see you there. Literally so funny.
You weren't accepting the invitation. You were threatening with a...
I was like, you're coming to my hometown. Like, I'll see you here.
That is incredible. Laura, the big question is, do we still use Oatly?
Ugh, no. Well, for me, no. I guess... Who knows if any of this will even have impacted their sales? Like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I think for me, I cannot... First of all, I can't call out a company and then continue to use them, no matter how nice I thought their product was.
Yeah.
Second of all, I'm making a statement by saying, if you're going to shout about your sustainability and then not live up to it, like, that's not authentic. Yeah. That's not being transparent. That's not good enough. I'm going to switch. And so I think for me as well, there are other options, like everything from making your own to supporting a different brand. There are other options. And I think it's important to send messages also to other sustainable brands to be like, look, you don't want to get yourself in the situation that Oatly have.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, for me, no, it's a no. But, like, I would never tell people what to do. All I wanted to do, and I think hopefully have done, is just be like, here's a great thing I think we should all think about, know about, hear about, you know, like, read this news story. Do what you want with it.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, for me, no, we've gone off it. We've switched.
And I think you have done that for me. I don't even know if I would have seen the story if I hadn't have, like, seen your tweet. And then when I read into it, and then I saw it on Instagram and stuff, and I was like, oh, well, here we go. And my last question to you, Laura, this is a question everyone gets on Into the Wild. And I think already you've passed on a lot of advice, so maybe you've struggled with this one. But if you could pass on just one bit of advice to everyone regarding the natural world, what would you say?
I mean, I'm advised out. Let me have a think about the natural world. Do you know what? I think 2020 has reignited my love for like seeing what's on your doorstep.
Mm.
And I think it's so important to think local and think global. Don't get me wrong. But while the world's in the state it's in, like, oh my gosh, make sure you take the opportunity to, like, squeeze every bit of goodness out of your local area, because I know for me that's been, like, crucial for my physical and mental health in lockdown, just, like, going to the wee local parks and, like, taking care of them. So, yeah, it would just be that, like, think, you know, think global, support global, but also, like, mate, that little park down the road is such a godsend.
Amazing. Laura, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today about everything. It's sustainability, waste, and also a bit of Oatly as well. It's been nice to get this chat in. Thank you so much for joining us on Into the Wild, and I wish you all the best for the rest of this weird and wonderful year.
Thank you so much, and you too.
Thanks again for listening. If you'd like to keep up to date with the projects of work Laura is working on, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at Less Waste Laura. You can also check out her website, linked in the write-up of this episode. And don't forget, you can get in touch with me at intothewildpod@gmail.com or on social media at intothewildpod on Twitter and intothewildpodcast on Instagram. Whether it's just to say hello, share some thoughts on an episode, or even let me know what you want to hear about next. Until next time, keep well, stay safe, and live the good life.